Time now for the Positive Chats podcast. And joining us for the podcast this morning, we have from the Center for Christian Virtues, the Director of Policy there is David Mahan. Good morning, David.
Good morning. How are you?
I am doing well. How about you?
Oh, man, I couldn't be better this morning.
Oh, awesome. And do we find you in Columbus this morning?
I'm, Pickerington area, just east Columbus.
All right. Well, Dave, we're going to be talking about the SAFE Act today. That's before the Ohio House. But first off, tell us about CCV, the Center for Christian Virtue, what you guys do.
Absolutely. So we are the largest Christian public policy organization in the state of Ohio. And we advocate for policies that are in line with, you know, biblical worldview and family and children. We also kind of like to bring, you know, our realm is the State House. We're right across the street from the State House downtown. So we're right in the belly of the beast. But we like to think of ourselves as a group that, you know, brings the shepherds of God's government together with the shepherds of God's house. And that we're uniquely placed in that way. And so if you think about all the tall buildings that surround the State House, all those buildings have lobbyists. And the taller the building, the more high powered the lobbyists. And who's representing the body of Christ and families down there at the State House? And that tends to be us. And so when a lot of members are looking to how policies affect families and things, they contact us directly.
The federal government always in the news when the election time. We always make sure that we're at the elections for those big ones, even governor. But probably more importantly, or as important, is to make sure that we do research and are a part of those elections, those off-year elections where a lot of the state representatives are elected.
That's right. Not just state representatives, but school boards. I mean, the school boards are driving folks nuts. We got a whole mama bear revolution that has exploded in the state of Ohio because of the mess that's going on in schools, which also is addressed in House Bill 454 as well. But another thing, since you bring it up, we have to be very careful is once we elect these guys, we stay on them. Right. Because what I'm finding, and I'm kind of new to this public policy space. I'm more from the activist education space. I've been in schools all across the country, different parts of the world for the last 20 years, my entire adult life, for the most part, working face to face and seeing these issues that we advocate for at CCV, just seeing them actually in communities. And that's, I think, why the Lord led me to this particular position to advocate for youth and families on a different level. You know, just to give you an example, you know, many of you heard of what was going on with so-called Leah Thomas or William Thomas, who won the NCAA championship in Georgia. Well, if you know, we've been praying for this, quote, red wave. Well, we've got a red wave in Ohio, right? We've got the House. The conservatives have the House. The Republicans have the Senate and the governor. And yet, you know, somehow we can't pass some of these what they would consider controversial bills, including Save Women's Sports. If we would have passed Save Women's Sports, Leah Thomas would have never got to Georgia because he wouldn't have been able to compete in Youngstown. Right. He was in Youngstown before he got to the NCAA championships. And in Youngstown, he beat those girls by 38 seconds, which is two full laps. He beat those girls. And if the Red Wave would have done what they were supposed to do, that would have never been legally possible. So we need to stay on them once we get them elected.
It's not so much a matter of party or politics, but it's just biblical values, isn't it?
It is, but I used to say that quite a bit, but there's a lot of politics involved. There, you know, in side meetings I have with senators and representatives, actually in their offices or in district, we agree on much of this, but politically they cannot agree in public because the same base that got them elected could get them primaried and kicked out. And so what we have to look at is platforms a lot of times when we're looking at politics. But you're right. I would agree in that it's not necessarily right versus left, but there is a right versus left battle going on down there at the State House.
All right. Tell us about what is the SAFE Act, House Bill 454?
So the SAFE Act basically is the prohibition of medicalization of children for the purpose of gender transition. You know, we're not really saying anything about, you know, adults who want to, you know, cut off their genitals, sew stuff on. That's their business. We have no say in that as long as doctors are not being forced to, you know, go against their conscience. We're talking about children, kids under 18 who cannot consent to the permanent sterilization, chemical sterilization and genital mutilation at a young age. And what we're hearing, even from the parents who have taken their kids to Children's Hospital, by the way, there's six gender clinics in the state of Ohio that's already doing this. So while most believers are just waking up to this, we've been doing this in the state of Ohio for years in children's hospitals. And what a lot of the parents are telling us is that, yes, they could consent for these things to be going on, but they didn't have the right information. They didn't have enough information. You know, they're literally sitting in front of these, quote, therapists, and they're saying, you know, talking to the child, do you think you're an opposite gender? Yes. Well, then what is your cross-sex name? And then they look to the mother and say, well, you know, here's your son, right? And would you rather have a live son or a dead daughter? And then try to start telling them now how to socially affirm or transition the child. And we've had two hearings recently. We had to fight for them for several months, but we finally had a proponent hearing on the 19th and then a proponent hearing on May 26th. So May 19th and May 26th, you can check them out on the Ohio channel. I highly encourage everybody to do so because we really need to educate ourselves on this issue to be able to advocate for these kids effectively. And again, we're not just advocating for kids who are being indoctrinated. We are advocating for kids who are struggling with gender dysphoria, who are struggling with their gender, their concept of who they are. They're struggling with the skin that they're in, and they need support and they need help because the solution that is being offered to them is more insidious than the initial problem. But yeah, a lot of these parents have not been given all of the information that they need to make the decision. They are kind of just being pushed down this whole gender affirmative therapy rabbit hole. And they're being told that if they don't, they'll be the cause of their kids committing suicide.
We're talking with David Mahan from the Center for Christian Virtue. And that's something we don't hear much about. We hear about the procedures, the actual medical procedures, but yeah, the actual therapy, the psychologists, the psychiatrists. How did we get to that point where they are in therapy sessions promoting this and advocating for it and pushing it?
Well, usually when you're talking about that stage, now we're talking about the second stage. So there's four stages of what they call gender transition. The first stage is social affirmation. And that's where, you know, Christians are battling over whether we need to use pronouns or not, you know, whether we should affirm a lie in the name of truth. We're struggling with that still. And then, you know, you've got the schools who are bringing in therapists and different groups, and they'll come in under the guise of mental health or sexual health education or diversity training. And so they'll come in and you'll have the advocate clubs and things like that in the schools. All that is social affirmation. And usually that goes on. And then the internet, you know, social media, all of that's going on usually without the parent knowing or even being aware that this is an issue. And then you move on to the second stage, which is the puberty blockade. So now we have to stop the naturally occurring puberty of this child so that secondary sex hormones don't or you know, characteristics don't start showing up. So breasts and pubic hair and larynx growth, deepening of the voice. And then the third stage is cross-sex hormones. So once you've stopped their naturally occurring puberty, which hopefully everybody understands that puberty is not just for gender affirmation. You would think so in 2022, but it's for brain development. It's for bone density. It's the natural, healthy development of a human being, regardless of what they think they are psychologically. But then you have to start, once you've stopped the puberty, now you have to kind of put in, if they're girls, you got to give them testosterone or T. If they're boys, you got to give them estrogen at very high rates, especially for girls on, with testosterone. And that process never stops. When you medicalize a child, you stop their puberty. Over 90% of those kids will move on. What we're finding through research, they will move on to cross-sex hormones. And that is a lifetime event. If they continue in that, that, you know, transgender state, they will have to continually receive medical attention. And then the fourth stage is actual surgery, gender affirming surgery, where they cut stuff off and stitch stuff on. And most of the time they don't function anyway. And they, as we found out with I Am Jazz, things blow up that were stitched up. It's, you know, as a part of these hearings, we actually had an entire organization represented of trans identified adults. And they are ones who say that, yes, we feel that we should be able to be trans if we want to be trans, but this is not for kids. There is no way that a child or a child's parent can know enough about what's going on with our bodies to consent to these procedures. They were telling us that their life expectancy is decreased by 20 years. They're telling us the surgeries that they had done had to be redone over and over again. The embarrassment of those things that they had surgically inserted and, you know, they're not working. All of these different issues, we actually had trans identified adults come in and testify about.
So what does the medical profession say about this, and also more specifically the psychological profession, the mental health profession?
Yeah, so the international standard of care is what's called watchful waiting and psychotherapy. And what that means is that these kids who are coming in, some of them suicidal, have comorbidities. And so, you know, adverse childhood experiences. Some of them are struggling with psychological conditions. Some of them have been raped or, you know, just under the struggle of having a divorce and struggling with who they are and trying to get the attention of one parent or the other. And so the international standard of care is we need to deal with all of those core morbidities first, figure out what's going on first, deal with those, and then we can maybe start saying, okay, now you are gender dysphoric. There's an incongruence between who you psychologically think you are and your biological reality of who you are. But we don't just internationally, we don't just, you know, throw them into medicalization. In the U.S., that is exactly what we're doing. We are affirming them in all these different various ways, four different ways, and without dealing with the comorbidities. The proof of that from our children's hospital, when they came and testified, we asked them a series of questions that you think they would have already answered, but I had to kind of force them to answer them in my testimony. Number one is how long, like what is the period of time from when a kid enters your door with their parent to when you start putting them on puberty blockers? They said on average 4 months. So you mean to tell me you're dealing with all of these comorbidities in 4 months before you start stopping their puberty at the age of 8 to 9, they said. Usually 8 to 9 years old, they're medicalizing children. And then during the 4 months, what kind of therapy are you offering if you're telling everybody in the state of Ohio and all across the country that you can't do any kind of counseling that would say that they are anything other than who they think they are, right? What they call conversion therapy. So what kind of therapy are you giving them if the only thing you can do, the only tool in your chest is affirmation? So it was very revealing when they came. And the other thing they struggled with is they said that they don't do surgeries on children. But what the mothers told us is that they refer for surgeries for kids. There's three surgeons in the state of Ohio that would do pediatric gender surgeries, which is absolutely sickening. And Children's Hospital does refer for those.
Where do we stand with the SAFE Act in the state right now?
You know, we are really in good footing. It sat because a lot of these Republicans were afraid to touch it. We know we have the votes in the House. But the Republicans on the committee, some of them are from Cincinnati, right? The Cincinnati area, Butler, Hamilton counties, and Children's Hospital are buddies, right, with them. And so they would rather this thing just sit in committee and die than to have to be on record with a vote. And so it sat there. But the pressure got so high that they actually gave us a hearing. We've had sponsor testimony. We've had two proponent testimonies or supporter testimonies. And then we had one opposition where, you know, Children's Hospital and the representative came in. And so now we're needing one more hearing, at least one more, to get a vote, to get it out of the House and into the Senate. And so that's where we need, support, you know, to support Representative Click, who's the bill sponsor, but then also to put some pressure on Representative Manchester, who's the chair of the Families and Aging Committee, so that we can get that vote and it doesn't just die in committee.
Yeah, with the pressure there, and it seems like if we say anything on social media, we say anything to just the general public, man, we get attacked. How can we let fear not get in the way of us voicing our opinion on this, or standing, yeah, I should say, standing for truth?
Thank you. The scripture doesn't say be salt and light if unless it's controversial. The modern church is like, man, if it's controversial, it's unloving. And really the other side is using that against us. What they're telling us is that affirmation equals love and healing. Right. The only way we can love and bring health and wholeness is by affirming whatever somebody thinks they are. And then disagreement equals hate and harm. That is what you're feeling when people push back. If you look at the hearings, when they push back on us and all of the people we brought in, including detransitioners, a 17-year-old girl who transitioned at 12, 13 years old, had her breast cut off at 15. And then realized at 16, wait a minute, I want to have kids. I've always wanted to have kids. And it just realized, she just realized, I can't breastfeed my children. Now you would think, well, wow, you knew that. But this happened. I mean, the social aspect of this is so strong. These kids don't know, you know, anything, right? You probably wanted to be a pirate when you were little. And so these kids are struggling with their identity for one reason, and they're not thinking this thing through. And then you add the medical community and their schools affirming this dysphoria. And then this one in particular went through the surgery and realized, I will never be able to be the kind of mother I want to be to my children, or maybe even be able to have a child. And so at 17, she detransitions. The girl stands there behind the podium, and nobody was really asking her the right question. These parents are talking at the podium, and all they want to know is, well, did you use your child's pronouns or not? That's probably why your child was suicidal. It is insane what is happening around this issue. And one of the things that we need to be aware of, family, is that the best science we have, the best longitudinal study we have out of Sweden, showed us that after several years, it was, you know, several years of tracking 324 trans-identified individuals, that once they went through surgery, all 324 of them, once they went through surgery, the suicide rate went up 19 times. Now, the important thing to understand here is they didn't realize that suicide rate until after 8 to 10 years. That's when they realized, whoa, we're seeing a problem here. Now, what does that say? That in the first year, 6 months, even 2 years or so, they're happy with what they did for the most part. But after they've lived in this pretend body for so long, and they wake up every day realizing that after all of this money, all this affirmation and time, all this pretending, they will never, ever really be what their mind is telling them they are. And you want to know, you know, depressed and suicidal? That's when you get depressed and suicidal, and that's what the best research is showing us. So, you know, Finland, Sweden, UK, all of these countries, none of them you would consider to be conservative, especially Finland and Sweden, are walking back their pediatric gender care, because the science is not there that shows that these procedures are improving the mental duress of these kids.
We're talking with David Mahan. He is a director of policy at the Center for Christian Virtue. David, what can we do to stand and help those in state government to push this act through?
I think we got to get as many eyes as we possibly can. You know, like I said, first of all, if we could just go and watch the hearings, right? Now, they were long, but you can go to ccv.org and catch, you know, the hearing highlights, but then contact the members of the committee, Families and Aging Committee in the House, and say, wait, hey, these are great, excellent, you know, great job on these hearings, very informative. Encourage them for even having the hearings and tell them you are looking and anticipating another hearing and a vote. The more eyes that they know is on it. See, what happens is they say what they want to say when they're in district. And then many of them come from their towns, their districts, and they hide at the state house. Right. The media is not talking about this stuff. In the light that conservatives would. We have no conservative mainstream media in the state of Ohio. So you got the Dispatches and the Cleveland.com. They're not going to be telling folks what they need to know. The only thing the districts understand is what they're saying. So you can have a representative in their district say, yeah, I'm against all this medicalizing of children. But if they never have to vote, right, it's like, you know, when they vote now, their constituents might get angry if they vote, right? Because a lot of these people are supported by Children's Hospital, Equitas Health, right? A lot of these LGBT supporting businesses. And so they're kind of in this middle ground of they're being pulled on by their voters in their district who have conservative values and they want them to stand up for them like they said they would. But then when they get to the state house, the only ones that are really watching them are the lobbyists. And they're pulling their way, you know, is backed by money. And so the more the districts can have their eyes on what's going on at the state house and keep them accountable, the better. And then prayer. Just like with Roe v. Wade, what we saw was a miracle. And that didn't happen outside of just prayer and 50 years of people being on their face before God. We need that. But my only issue there is if you don't know what to pray, you may be praying amiss, the Bible says. And so we need to bump up our level of education. And so we can come out and speak at your churches. I do a lot of that, as well as, you know, like I said, jump on that Ohio channel and watch the hearings. Very engaging.
And what about the fight at our schools? What can we do if our school system is promoting these types of values?
Listen, a lot of these little towns, you know, the school boards, 7 to 9 people control what 10 to 20,000 students get every year. And it's probably the least, you know, in terms of all the votes, all the elections, probably the least amount of people show up for school boards. If we would just leave our intercessory prayer meetings and Wednesday night services and run down there and vote for, a school board member in the community that has our biblical worldviews, we could clean up all of this mess real quick. But the only way for negative stuff to happen in these schools is for good people to do nothing. And that is the problem. We are doing nothing, relatively speaking, about these local, city councils and school board. We have to take them over because, listen, and the other thing that the biggest thing there is the backpack bill. That's our bill for money following the child, which means a parent goes to the school board. They say, you know, hey, I don't like what you're teaching in terms of curriculum in the schools. That school board really doesn't have to listen to most parents, right? Because what are you going to do? You know, if you're inner city, you can't go to a different school, right? You're locked into that inner city school. So until that money follows the child and that parent is empowered with a policy like the backpack bill to take that child from that school who will not listen to a school that will best meet the needs of their child. It's just going to be whack-a-mole, one issue after the other. And again, at CCV, we fight those battles and win a lot of times. But until that parent has the right and is empowered to make the best educational decision for their child, we're going to always have these fights.
Well, David, what will we find at CCV.org to help us out?
CCV.org's got a lot of videos on these issues. Again, we've got we sign up for our alerts, jump on our Facebook page. We've got Mama Bear, or like at least 10 Mama Bear groups across the state of Ohio, where they keep us informed of what's going on in their districts with bathroom policies and different things. And we keep them informed. And then we also open the door for them, as well as our churches and pastors, to come down to the state house and pray and meet these representatives, not just yours, but senators and representatives from across the state. Pray with them, lay hands on them, worship with them right there in the state house. And then when issues come up, we can get you. We're the gatekeeper to get you in front of these members so that we can get you a letter and make your voice amplified in your little towns or wherever you may be. So that's one of the things that we can do but we can't reach you if we don't have your contact. So please sign up for alerts on the website. And again, access to all of these Ohio Channel hearings and things are also available there.
All right, David, thank you so much for your work with CCV and in the state of Ohio, and for your passion and your love. And we pray your guidance and protection and wisdom in all that you do, and also everybody at CCV. Thank you so much. David Mahan, Director of Policy at Center for Christian Virtue. We really appreciate your time this morning chatting with us.
Thank you, sir. Be blessed.